aware in whatever posture you're in, aware of seeing if your eyes are open, aware of hearing my voice, and exploring the possibility of being aware while hearing a talk, hearing a Dharma talk. It's a great practice that can translate into daily life practice, because the exploration is that of hearing and noticing how you are. How is the mind and body responding to what is said? Being aware while taking in content. You don't have to focus on the content or try to track the content. That's okay. You don't have to do that. You might. That might happen. That would be okay too. But with the words that land, what happens? What are the ripples? What happens in your experience as you receive the words? When asked why we practice, Sayadaw responded, "The purpose of practice is to develop wisdom." The wisdom that is developed as we practice is not a general kind of wisdom connected with how we go about doing things in the world. It's not the wisdom of learning to drive a car or work a computer or things like that. It's a particular kind of wisdom that helps the mind to understand suffering, understand how suffering functions in the mind, and how it is created and released. The wisdom that we cultivate is wisdom that supports the release from suffering. And that wisdom is developed by understanding suffering, by meeting suffering, by opening to suffering. Suffering is a very broad word. In English, it has connotations that usually are on one end of the spectrum. We often think of suffering as being something pretty major. And yet the word that is usually translated as suffering, dukkha, there's a lot of subtlety to it. Different levels of meaning, different ranges of meaning. And so the dukkha can range from dukkha as what we would call suffering, can range from subtle unease, just a feeling something's not quite right, to really strong pain and difficulty and reactivity. And there's another meaning of dukkha too, which is worth remembering as we are exploring wisdom that understands dukkha. And one of our practices in terms of understanding suffering, the curiosity we have is, what is this experience that is felt as suffering? We explore that. We try to understand it not through a intellectual perspective, but through a direct experiential perspective. What is this suffering? Another perspective on dukkha is a definition of experience as unreliable. And with that perspective, every experience is dukkha. Because there's no experience that is reliable in terms of that it will last in order for us to have a lasting happiness. Every experience that we have with our sense bases arises and passes away. It is impermanent. Because it's impermanent, it is not a place where we can kind of land and say, yep, have that thing, gonna hold on to that thing. That thing's gonna make me happy. That thing is gonna do it for me. Not gonna happen. Because of the impermanent nature of experience, every experience is unreliable. So this is another thing, another aspect of dukkha to understand. Knowing experience, seeing experience as impermanent and unreliable, recognizing the nature of experience to come and go. Now, this is what the instructions of wise mindfulness, of right mindfulness, are designed to help us see. Not only to meet our dukkha, not only to meet our reactivity, our stress, our frustration, our greed, all of those reactive states of mind, not only to meet all of that and to understand how that works, but also to more deeply understand the inherently unreliable nature of experience. And so our mindfulness practice, in terms of cultivating this wisdom, cultivating this understanding, we can know these things intellectually, but still find ourselves clinging, still find ourselves holding on. And so there are deeper levels of kind of not intellectual understanding, but experiential understanding that the mindfulness practice supports the wisdom to develop at those deeper levels. And so the wisdom, kind of different levels of wisdom in our, that develop, different levels of wisdom that grow. The suttas speak about three kinds of wisdom, and we could think about these as three levels of wisdom. The wisdom, Sutta-maya-panya, the wisdom that comes from what we take in through reading, through hearing people speak. And again, the wisdom we're referring to here is the wisdom that the Buddha is pointing to. The wisdom around all of the teachings the Buddha offered are wisdom teachings that point in the direction of understanding how suffering works, both of these kinds of suffering. So that taking in the information, hearing, Sutta-maya-panya, you know, that's kind of we take in the information, we think about it, you know, it's processed with our mind, our thoughts. And that level of wisdom, you know, we can take it in, we might reflect on it, think about it, and that reflecting and thinking about begins to touch into the next level of wisdom, which is Cittamayapanya, the wisdom of reflection. So we take in the teachings, think about them, reflect on, does this make sense to me? How might I understand this? So that this begins to kind of touch into our rational, the intellectual part of our minds that massage information. And then from there, perhaps that massaging of information gives us the inspiration, the reflective part of our mind says, because in fact, the wisdom teachings the Buddha offers are not just things that we're supposed to think about, but they're things we're supposed to act on. They are teachings to engage with. And so as we reflect on and think about these teachings, we may begin to engage, we may begin to gain some trust, have some confidence that this might be a useful way to explore our experience. And so that carries the possibility for the wisdom to go even deeper as we begin to explore. Because if we spend all our days thinking about the teachings without putting them into practice, the deeper kind of wisdom that will ultimately allow that freedom, will ultimately understand the wisdom at those deep levels, the deep levels that understand dukkha, wisdom that understands dukkha at those deep levels to release the suffering. So that engagement is necessary. An engagement with the teachings. And so the practice, the exploration, picking up the teachings and actually engaging with them, that begins to carry the wisdom. It's like it carries it more deeply into our experience. We begin to see and trust that wisdom through experience, not just because we've heard somebody talk about it or we thought it's a good idea. We begin to see directly how valuable it is. So there are different ways that wisdom is expressed in the Buddhist teaching, different teachings that kind of the Buddha says, this is right view. The Four Noble Truths, for instance, understand suffering, let go of the cause of suffering, realize the release from suffering, and cultivate the path to freedom, cultivate the path to the ending of suffering. That is framed as wise view. Another framing of wise view is the understanding of karma, that actions have consequences. We engage with action based in greed, aversion, and delusion, and suffering tends to follow. Stress, dissatisfaction, pain follows. Engaging in actions based in non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion tends to lead us towards more happiness, more ease, more peace. Well, this is the teaching of karma, and these are useful teachings to take in, to hear, to reflect on. But just in and of themselves, you know, the Four Noble Truths, absent the actions associated with them, there is suffering. Craving is the, with the arising of craving is the arising of suffering. With the ending of craving is the ending of suffering. There is a path that leads to the ending of craving. Just that doesn't necessarily, unless you happen to hear path as something we could do, it doesn't necessarily engage us. And so we have to step into a little deeper the teachings to find out what are the ways to engage with these teachings. It's not just sitting there thinking about them. And so the teachings on sila, that's an engagement. The teachings on ethical conduct and the teachings of wise effort, making the effort to cultivate the wholesome, let go of the unwholesome. The teachings on wise mindfulness, practicing, cultivating wise mindfulness. And concentration. These are some of the actions. The Eightfold Path has the actions that we engage with. In the very beginning of the Eightfold Path is wise view. So it has to begin from somewhere. We have to begin through some understanding, some hearing something, hearing a teaching, hearing the teachings of the Buddha that actually say it's possible to be free from suffering. You need to explore and understand your suffering experientially. And here are some tools that help that. The main tool we're exploring here in this retreat is awareness, wise mindfulness. And I wanted to take a little time to reflect on, because the very way that the teaching of wise mindfulness is expressed, the teaching in the Satipatthana Sutta, the way that Sayadaw talks about practicing, cultivating awareness, it embeds wisdom. The very way we talk about practice, how we encourage practice to unfold, includes perspectives of wisdom. And so I wanted to kind of highlight a few of those. I mentioned one this morning in the reflection this morning about whatever is already arising, this is a place where mindfulness can be cultivated. That's a wisdom perspective. There's wisdom in that that is pointing to it doesn't matter what is happening. That objects are just objects. Objects are experiences that happen, and any object, because an object is a phenomenon that is unreliable, is impermanent, every single experience is a valuable experience to be aware of. Whatever is naturally arising in this moment, that is a valuable experience to be aware of. This points in a way to a little bit of a shift of perspective, because what this is asking us to do is to understand in this moment that what is happening in the moment is just a happening. An object is just an object. An object is arising in this moment. That is worth understanding and seeing, and it is just a phenomenon of the moment. That's not our usual perspective with experience. It sounds like a simple thing to, sometimes we're talking about mindfulness, we just explore, I said, explore experience as experience, just as human experience. That's not our usual perspective on experience. Our usual perspective on experience brings in ideas about what should be happening, what shouldn't be happening, ideas about what's a good experience, what's a bad experience, ideas about it happening to me, as opposed to it's just an arising experience that is being known. So any object is available, is a valuable place to cultivate mindfulness. And mindfulness needs to be balanced. So this is some other piece of wisdom that we need to explore and recognize when we can simply recognize, oh, this is an experience arising in the present moment. That's interesting. This experience is coming and going. This is an experience happening in the present moment as an experience. This is this human experience in this moment. All of this is embedding a perspective of wisdom to our practice. And yet, there are times when we can't have that perspective, when our perspective is so tied up in knots around the experience. It's identified with the experience. It has the attitude or the perspective of it being a problem. And we may not be able to see that we are relating through that attitude if it's a problem. And so we might recognize, as I've said, if we see that the experience is getting stronger, tumbling forward, getting more and more intense, a reactivity getting more intense as we try to be mindful of it, then wisdom can help us to recognize, okay, this object at this moment, the mind cannot simply treat it as an object, any object. It can't treat it that way. It can't treat it as an object, it's just an object. It's too caught up in it being a certain kind of object. And so we need to recognize when we can have that perspective of this is just an experience. This thought that's arising, this is just a thought that's arising. When we can have that perspective, there is learning that's happening around that experience. May not be obvious to you what learning is happening, but there's learning, that subtle, quiet understanding that's growing, even just around the simplicity of understanding. Objects are just phenomena arising in the present moment. Beginning to shift our perspective away from our habitual relationship to objects in the present moment. Relating through me, relating through who, through I, through our various relationships we have to experience, habitual relationships to experience. Another kind of reflection around objects as objects, an object just being an object. Objects as simply arisings in the present moment, they do not have the power to disturb the mind. Objects don't have that power, which is a good thing. Any disturbance that's coming up in our minds is happening in the mind. It's the relationship. It's the identification. The object itself inherently, the object itself is innocent of the suffering. It's how we have been conditioned to respond to that object where the suffering comes in. So this perspective of being curious about an object is just an object. This recognition of this is what's happening in this moment. It's a happening. This is a happening. It begins to strengthen a capacity for non-judgmental awareness, or the awareness that just can meet experience. We start to open to what the phrase in Pali, yata bhuta, things as they are, things as they have come to be. Things as they are arising, passing away. Things as they are conditioned. So this simple perspective of an object is just an object, just something happening in the present moment. This is a very powerful perspective that wise mindfulness brings into our practice that helps to shift our mind away from its habitual relationships to experience, to relating to experience in a new way, relating to experience more from non-reactivity, just that curiosity. What is this experience that's arising right now? Another perspective that we encourage, that the teachings on mindfulness encourage, are to be curious not only about things arising and passing, not only that this is something happening in the present moment as a happening, but a curiosity about the conditions related to that happening. This we talk about this, you know, it's a perspective that's useful to be curious about, but not something necessarily to do, to try to see the conditioning. I hear sometimes people talking about exploring why something happened, or, you know, kind of exploring the conditions that led to something. And often they're describing thinking about what happened. And that's not the instructions with the mindfulness practice. That can be useful at times, not to deny or deny the potential value of that at times. But the deeper insight, the kind of way that the practice of mindfulness can open to the deeper wisdom that meets experience as conditioned, That happens more as the mindfulness gets a little more continuous, as there's a thread of mindfulness that's pulled through moment to moment, very naturally mindfulness begins to see how things are connected to each other. And so we talk about that things are conditioned. Every experience, so the arising of every experience, it's not random. It's happening based on conditions, causes and conditions from the past, from how we are relating to it in this moment. So that's a little bit of wisdom teaching to take in. And then as we explore with the practice itself, curiosity about cultivating the continuity of mindfulness and seeing what happens moment to moment, the mindfulness starts to understand the conditions that lead, in particular, lead to suffering, that lead to how suffering is put together. We can see the mind leaning towards picking something up and like charging ahead with anger and aversion. And we feel the suffering of that. So we begin to understand through direct experience that this teaching of the second noble truth, that craving, with the arising of craving is the arising of suffering. We experience that much more directly. And there's that wisdom that comes with that, the direct seeing of when the mind picks up something to crave, and this is what I said a moment ago, you know, it's like the object is innocent of the suffering. It's only when we pick it up that the tension and the stress happen. We see that, we feel that directly. We see that the object is innocent of the suffering and that the craving is happening in the mind. And that the reason, the reason why we are struggling and suffering is not because of the object, but it's because of what the mind is doing with the object. So that's a condition. We see the condition for suffering arising. We see the direct connection between the arising of craving, the arising of the holding on, picking up, and the experience of suffering. Now, that experience is not a pleasant one, but it's one that leads to learning. It is a direct, it's like the system our human system gets in that moment, that movement to pick something up and hold on to it. Not a good, you know, not a good direction, not helpful in terms of ease and peace. And we do, the mind, the system wants to move in the direction of ease and peace. And so that seeing, that direct seeing of that, the condition that leads to suffering, that direct seeing helps the system begin to understand how to let go of it. The wisdom that is cultivated through the direct seeing, the direct practice, the wisdom is what releases the suffering. It's not something we do. It's not, we don't decide, I'm going to let go of that. The seeing and the cultivation of the wisdom is what allows that release. The job of wisdom is to release suffering, to understand suffering and to release it. That's what wisdom does. So our job is to create the conditions in which wisdom can grow. We recognize experience as experience in the present moment. This is a perspective, a shift of perspective that can take some time for us to come to. But that, even just that simple shift, puts us on this path to starting to cultivate this wisdom. Seeing conditioning at work, when we directly see that in the moment, we see this pattern that's unfolding. Sometimes we can see clearly through this curiosity, awareness in the moment of what's arising in the moment. Sometimes we can clearly see and understand how this pattern of this habitual pattern, or we understand that this is something that we've done a lot of in our lives. It's been conditioned over and over again. And that, seeing that as conditioned, to me, that recognition, that realization, that wisdom that recognizes, oh, this is something that has happened a lot, the conditions have supported this particular pattern to happen a lot in this particular human being. Of course, this is happening right now. This is not something, you know, if I had the choice, if I could stop it, I would. But it's conditioned. It is not self. It is arising based on conditions from the past, something that's happened in the present. Of course, this is happening right now. In my experience, that understanding of that something is conditioned. We don't even have to know how it was conditioned, but just recognizing this thing that's arising right now, yes, it's conditioned. That recognition can be incredibly freeing. We don't have to know all the details, fortunately, because as the Buddha pointed out, you know, the threads of conditions that led to what is happening right in this moment are infinitely vast. We cannot know them all. But we can understand through seeing, through watching and understanding experience unfold and seeing that things are conditioned, we can recognize this it's arising, this habit that's arising, this is conditioned. In my experience, that's created so much space around the experience to see, just to simply see, oh yeah, this is conditioned. Of course, this is happening. It can take the identification out of, it's like the mind that understands it's conditioned is not so wrapped up in it being who I am. It is just a phenomenon tumbling on, of course, this is nature. This is conditions unfolding. So this, at this point, that, you know, it's useful perhaps to reflect on how some of these different levels of wisdom can play with each other. So we hear that things are conditioned. We may have seen or explored or recognized experience as conditioned at times. At times we actually drop into that experiential place where we see, oh my goodness, yes, wow, this is arising and this is being created right in this instant, seeing how this pattern is happening. Sometimes we drop into that very deep that seeing place. But sometimes there's a middle ground where we may feel like we're struggling a little bit with something that's happening. And we may be able to use this middle level of wisdom, the reflective level of wisdom, to kind of remind ourselves either of things we've heard teachers say or of things we have understood previously. Sayadaw calls this borrowing wisdom in a moment. You know, we can borrow wisdom from things we've heard previously, kind of reminding ourselves, you know, it's thinking is happening. Okay, a thought is just a thought. This is just an object happening in the present moment. We can bring that reflection in, and that can support the mind to, it's like bringing that perspective in may help the mind to open to seeing it in a new way. And so sometimes I've seen that dropping in these wisdom reflections can help the mind to find some balance when it's a little bit wobbly. Bringing in, you know, the perspective. It's just an object, just something happening in the present moment. It's just a thought that may be borrowed from things some teachers have said or things that we've read. This is just conditioned. It's conditioned phenomena. This is nature. We can remind ourselves of this, and it can create some space that may allow us to more deeply land in the direct experience of the moment, to be able to see that wisdom at work in that present moment. So these two levels of wisdom can kind of play with each other. The reminding ourselves of wisdom can help the mind open into the direct experience more fully. So we can borrow from other teachers, things we've heard, but we can also, and this can even be in some ways more powerful at times, we can borrow wisdom from ourselves. You know, we experience opening to understanding something. At one point I was exploring, recognizing the self-hatred arising in the moment, and just really practicing very, very steadily with knowing self-hatred arising and seeing what was going on in that moment. It was like the self-hatred was not there, and then it was there. And so it's like, well, this is a great opportunity. I can see what's happening as it goes from not being there to being there. And what the mind saw was there was a thought that arose in the mind, some kind of thought about you're a failure, you're no good, you're whatever, you know, some kind of thought like that. And then the mind believed that thought. So that was seen. That the process from that, where it went from non-self-hatred into how self-hatred was constructed. So seeing that condition arise, the understanding that was expressed in the moment in the mind, it was kind of like a shock. It's like, oh my gosh, the mind just made this up. The mind just like picked up that thought and believed it. That's what happened. This is just a thought. That was how that wisdom expressed itself in my mind in that moment. It was a direct experience of wisdom that then kind of filtered back into a reflective thought. This is just a thought. It's not got any inherent truth to it. So that was the direct experience. And then it got expressed. It got pulled back into the reflective mind. So this is another way that these levels of wisdom play with each other. Sometimes the wisdom arises and we are freed and we have no idea. There's not a kind of corresponding thought or expression or real clear knowing of what was what happened there. We just know that we have been released from suffering, and that's enough too. But in this case, there was a little bit of, you know, the seeing of the what had been understood. And the next morning, you know, so that happened pretty late at night. The next morning I woke up and I saw the mind start doing this again, you know, start jumping into its habit of self-hatred. As soon as I saw that, the mind brought in that remembrance of, I saw this last night. That's just a thought. You know, it's nothing. It's just the mind believing a thought. That's all that's going on here. And having that reflection, so the reflection then allowed the mind to deepen back into that space where that pattern was released. So these levels of wisdom actually interact with each other. Not something that we, you know, necessarily make happen. And, you know, again, I want to caution you from trying to do what I'm talking about. The practice itself is so simple. Wise mindfulness, embedding these perspectives of just know experience as experience, curiosity about the conditioned nature of experience. That's the practice. What we get to see, the practice is simple. You know, what we get to see as we explore in this simple way, the simpler the mind, the simpler the awareness that's just receiving, not trying to fix or do or see something new, but just receiving. The simpler the mind, the more complexity is seen. So the mindfulness, the awareness is so simple. What we do is so simple. And what is seen is kind of mind-blowing, mind-blowingly complex, can be complex. So not to confuse the complexity of the description of what can be seen with making the practice complex. The practice needs to be simple, 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 simple. Just this moment. Curiosity about objects in this moment. Curiosity about the conditioned nature, how things affect each other. So this morning I talked about noticing how thoughts affect the system. That's a kind of embedding wisdom, embedding that curiosity about conditionality. Another way to express a wisdom perspective or a wisdom perspective for our practice. And again, simple. This one is not, again, not so much something to do. And the first one is really the first one of just knowing experience moment after moment. So we cultivate the mindfulness that knows just objects, knows experience, moment after moment, receiving experience. We cultivate the continuity of that mindfulness, which begins to reveal the conditionality of these experiences that are happening. The other thing that continuity begins to show us is that these things that we think of as objects, they're not even objects. Objects aren't things. You know, we sometimes place an idea on, this is a thing I'm looking at. But there's no thingness there. It is just conditions continuously changing. And our minds apply a concept to some aspect of that changing experience and puts a little package around it and says, that's a thing. But there's no inherent thingness there. Objects themselves are simply a rapidly changing, what we think of as objects, rapidly changing phenomenon. There's no there. Experience. The continuity of our mindfulness that is curious about just what is arising and passing away begins to see this very ephemeral nature of experience, how rapidly it is just like sand falling through an hourglass. It is just slippery. There's not any place to land. There's one teaching, and just this occurred to me, and I've not explored this out loud before, so I don't know how this is going to come out. There's a teaching that's something like, well, what are things? What are the things? And the response, and I'm not sure if this is in the Buddha's words, was found in the suttas, but I'm not sure who is speaking. It could be Shariputra, could be the Buddha. Not sure. The response is, greed is a thing. Aversion is a thing. Delusion is a thing. And just now, as I was thinking about this, experience is not a something. I remembered this passage. And so what occurred to me to make this connection is that it is greed, aversion, and delusion that make it seem like there is a something. Greed is a something, aversion is a something, delusion is a something. That's the movement, the movement of mind to pick something up makes it seem like a something. But objects, experience itself, nothing there to kind of land on as a thing. So again, to come back to simple, the practice itself, just aware of what's here and knowing, recognizing when that's not possible, using the discernment, the wisdom, and when we need to balance our mind, of course. The more the mindfulness stabilizes, the more capacity we have to just meet experience moment after moment. Cultivating this simple, simple awareness that reveals how our minds get caught. And that seeing of that, the wisdom arises with that seeing and begins to free the mind, begins to free it from its habits and patterns of greed, aversion, and delusion, the makings of somethings, the makings of some things that we then hold on to. Another kind of amazing realization. The things, what we cling to, what we crave, what we hold on to. It is a something created by greed or aversion or delusion. It is a creation of the mind. Those things that we think we're holding on to. So let's just sit together for a couple moments, a couple minutes.